50. Shash 37. We also instruct that you should not return to Obra Dei. We have claimed that world, and a new avatar of our being is beginning to manifest there. She is young yet, and, as a precaution, she has been instilled with an intense and overpowering dislike of you. To Dalinar, flying felt much like being on a ship in the ocean. There was something profoundly disconcerting about being out on the ocean, subject to the winds and currents. Men didn't control the waves, they merely set out and prayed that the ocean didn't decide to consume them. Flying alongside Captain Kaladin provoked some of the same emotions in Dalinar. On one hand, the view over the shattered plains was magnificent. He felt he could almost see the pattern to it that Shallan mentioned. On the other hand, this kind of travel was deeply unnatural. Winds buffeted them, and if you moved your hands or arched your back in the wrong way, you were sent in a different direction from everyone else. Kaladin had to constantly zip back and forth, riding one of them that got blown off course. And if you looked down, and paused to consider exactly how high up you were? Well, Dalinar was not a timid man, but he was still glad of Navani's hand in his. On his other side flew Elokar, and beyond him were Kadash and a pretty young Ardent who served as one of Navani's scholars. The five of them were escorted by Kaladin and 10 of his squires. The Windrunners had been training steadily for 3 weeks now, and Kaladin had finally, after practicing by flying groups of soldiers back and forth to the war camps, agreed to treat Dalinar and the king to a similar trip.
"It is like being on a ship," Dalinar thought.
What would it feel like to be up here during a high storm? That was how Kaladin planned to get Elokar's team to Kolinar, fly them at the leading edge of a storm so his stormlight was continually renewed.
"You're thinking of me," the Stormfather said. "I can feel it."
"I'm thinking of how you treat ships," Dalinar whispered, his physical voice lost to the winds, yet his meaning carried unhampered to the Stormfather.
"Men should not be upon the waters during a storm," he replied. "Men are not of the waves."
"And the sky? Are men of the sky?"
"Some are,"
he said this grudgingly. Dalinar could only imagine how terrible it must be to be a sailor out at sea during a storm. He had taken only short coastwise trips by ship.
"No, wait," he thought. "There was one, of course. A trip to the valley."
He barely remembered that voyage, though he could not blame that solely upon the Night Watcher. Captain Kaladin swooped over. He was the only one who seemed truly in control of his flying. Even his men flew more like dropped rocks than sky eels. They lacked his finesse, his control. Though the others could help if something went wrong, Kaladin had been the only one lashing Dalinar and the others. He said he wanted practice for the eventual flight to Kolinar. Kaladin touched Elokar, and the king started to slow. Kaladin then moved down the line, slowing each in turn. He then swept them up so they were close enough to speak. His soldiers stopped and floated nearby.
"What's wrong?"
Dalinar asked, trying to ignore that he was hanging hundreds of feet in the sky.
"Nothing's wrong," Kaladin said, then pointed.
With the wind in his eyes, Dalinar had failed to spot the war camps, 10 crater-like circles arrayed along the northwestern edge of the shattered plains. From up here, it was obvious they had once been domes, the way their walls curved like cupping fingers from underneath. 2 of the war camps were still fully occupied, and Sabariel had set up forces to lay claim to the nearby forest. Dalinar's own war camp was less populated, but had a few platoons of soldiers and some workers.
"We arrived so quickly," Navani said.
Her hair was a wind-tousled mess, much of it having escaped her careful braid. Elokar hadn't fared much better. His hair sprayed out from his face like waxed Thalen eyebrows. The 2 Ardents, of course, were bald and didn't have such worries.
"Quick indeed," Elokar said, redoing a few buttons of his uniform. "This is most promising for our mission."
"Yeah," Kaladin said.
I still want to test it more in front of a storm. He took the king by the shoulder, and Elokar started to drift downward. Kaladin sent them each down in turn, and when his feet finally touched stone again, Dalinar heaved a sigh of relief. They were only one plateau over from the war camp, where a soldier at a watch post waved to them with eager, exaggerated movements. Within minutes, a troop of Kolin soldiers had surrounded them. "Let's get you inside the walls, Bright Lord," their captain lord said, hand on the pommel of his sword. "The shellheads are still active out here."
"Have they attacked this close to the camps?" Elokar asked, surprised.
"No, but that doesn't mean they won't, Your Majesty." Dalinar wasn't so worried, but said nothing as the soldiers ushered him and the others into the war camp where Brightness Yasalai, the tall, stately woman Dalinar had put in charge of the camp, met and accompanied them. After spending so much time in the alien hallways of Yuvathiru, walking through this place, which had been Dalinar's home for 5 years, was relaxing. Part of that was finding the war camp mostly intact. It had weathered the Everstorm quite well. Most of the buildings were stone bunkers, and that western rim of the former dome had provided a solid windbreak.
"My only worry," he told Yasalai after a short tour, "is about logistics. This is a long march from Narak and the Oathgate. I fear that by dividing our forces among Narak, here, and Yuvathiru, we're increasing our vulnerability to an attack."
"That is true, Bright Lord," the woman said. "I endeavor only to provide you with options."
Unfortunately, they would probably need this place for farming operations, not to mention the lumber. Plateau runs for gem hearts couldn't sustain the tower's city population forever, particularly in the face of Shallan's assessment that they had likely hunted chasm fiends near to extinction. Dalinar glanced at Navani. She thought they should found a new kingdom here on and around the Shattered Plains. Import farmers, retire older soldiers, start production here on a much larger scale than they'd ever tried before. Others disagreed. There was a reason the unclaimed hills weren't densely inhabited. It would be a harsh life here. Rock buds grew smaller, crops would be less productive. And founding a new kingdom during a desolation? Better to protect what they had. Alethkar could probably feed Yuvathiru, but that depended on Kaladin and Elokar recovering the capital. Their tour ended with a meal at Dalinar's bunker, in his former sitting room, which looked bare now that most of the furniture and rugs had been removed to Yuvathiru. After the meal, he found himself standing by the window, feeling oddly out of place. He'd left this war camp only 10 weeks ago, but the place was at once deeply familiar and also no longer his. Behind him, Navani and her scribe ate fruit as they chatted quietly over some sketches that Navani had done.
"Oh, but I think that the others need to experience that brightness," the scribe said. "The flight was remarkable. How fast do you think we were going? I believe we might have attained a speed that no human has reached since the Recreants. Think about that, Navani. Surely we were faster than the fastest horse or ship."
"Focus, Rushu," Navani said. "My sketch."
"I don't think this math is right, Brightness. No, that sail will never stand."
"It's not meant to be completely accurate," Navani said. "Just a concept. My question is, can it work?"
"We'll need more reinforcement." "Yes, more reinforcement for certain. And then the steering mechanism, definitely work to do there. This is clever, though, Brightness. Falalar needs to see it. He will be able to say whether or not it can be built."
Dalinar glanced away from the window, catching Navani's eye. She smiled. She always claimed that she wasn't a scholar, but a patron of scholars. She said her place was to encourage and guide the real scientists. Anyone who saw the light in her eyes as she took out another sheet and sketched her idea further knew she was being too modest. She began another sketch, but then stopped and glanced to the side where she'd set out a span reed. The ruby was blinking.
"Fen," Dalinar thought.
The Queen of Thelena had asked that, in this morning's high storm, Dalinar send her into the vision of a Ahariettiam. which she knew about from the published accounts of Dalinar's visions. He'd reluctantly sent her alone, without supervision. They'd been waiting for her to speak of the event, to say anything. In the morning, she hadn't replied to their requests for a conversation. Navani prepared the span reed, then set it writing. It scribbled for only a brief moment.
"That was short," Dalinar said, stepping toward her.
"Only one word," Navani said.
She looked up at him.
"Yes."
Dalinar heaved out a long breath. She was willing to visit Urethiru.
Finally.
"Tell her we'll send her a radiant."
He left the window, watching as she replied. In her sketch pad, he caught sight of some kind of ship-like contraption, but with the sail on the bottom. What in the world? Fenn seemed content to leave the conversation there, and Navani returned to her discussion of engineering, so Dalinar slipped from the room. He passed through his bunker, which felt hollow, like the rind of a fruit with the pulp scooped out. No servants scuttling back and forth, no soldiers. Kaladin and his men had gone off somewhere, and Kadash was probably at the camp monastery. He'd been keen to get there, and Dalinar had been gratified by his willingness to fly with Kaladin. They hadn't spoken much since their confrontation in the sparring room. Well, perhaps seeing the Windrunner's power firsthand would improve Kadash's opinion of the Radiance. Dalinar was surprised, and secretly pleased, to find that no guards had been posted at the bunker's back door. He slipped out alone and headed to the Warcamp Monastery. He wasn't looking for Kadash. He had another purpose. He soon arrived at the monastery, which looked like most of the war camp, a collection of buildings with the same smooth, rounded construction, crafted from the air by Alethi soulcasters. This place had a few small, hand-built buildings of cut stone, but they looked more like bunkers than places of worship. Dalinar had never wanted his people to forget that they were at war. He strolled through the campus and found that, without a guide, he didn't know his way among the nearly identical structures. He stopped in a courtyard between buildings. The air smelled of wet stone from the high storm, and a nice group of shellbark sculptures rose to his right, shaped like stacks of square plates. The only sound was water dripping from the eaves of the buildings. Storms, he should know his way around his own monastery, shouldn't he?
How often did you actually visit here during all the years in the war camps?
He'd meant to come more often and talk to the Ardents in his chosen devotary. There had always been something more pressing, and besides, the Ardents stressed that he didn't need to come. They had prayed and burned glyph wards on his behalf. That was why High Lords owned Ardents. Even during his darkest days of war, they'd assured him that in pursuing his calling, by leading his armies, he served the Almighty. Dalinar stooped into a building that had been divided into many small rooms for prayers. He walked down a hallway until he stepped through a storm door into the atrium, which still smelled faintly of incense. It seemed insane that the Ardents would be angry with him now, after training him his whole life to do as he wished. But he'd upset the balance, rocked the boat. He moved among braziers filled with wet ash. Everyone liked the system they had. The Light Eyes got to live without guilt or burden, always confident that they were active manifestations of God's will. The Dark Eyes got free access to training in a multitude of skills. The Ardents got to pursue scholarship. The best of them lived lives of service. The worst lived lives of indolence. But what else were important light-eyed families going to do with unmotivated children? A noise drew his attention, and he left the courtyard and looked into a dark corridor. Light poured from a room at the other end, and Dalinar was not surprised to find Kadash inside. The Ardent was moving some ledgers and books from a wall safe into a pack on the floor. On a desk nearby, a span reed scribbled. Dalinar stepped into the room. The scarred Ardent jumped, then relaxed when he saw it was Dalinar.
"Do we need to have this conversation again, Dalinar?" he asked, turning back to his packing.
"No," Dalinar said. "I didn't actually come looking for you. I want to find a man who lived here, a madman who claimed to be one of the heralds.
Kadash cocked his head. Ah, yes. The one who had a shard blade? All of the other patients at the monastery are accounted for, safe at Urethiru, but he vanished somehow. I was hoping to see if his room offered any clues to what became of him. Kadash looked at him, gauging his sincerity. Then the Ardent sighed, rising.
That's a different devotee from mine, he said. But I have occupancy records here. I should be able to tell you which room he was in.
Thank you.
Kadash looked through a stack of ledgers.
Shash building, he finally said, pointing absently out the window. That one right there, room 37. Insa ran the facility. Her records will list details of the madman's treatment. If her departure from the war camp was anything like mine, she'll have left most of her paperwork behind.
He gestured toward the safe and his packing.
Thank you, Dalinar said.
He moved to leave.
You think the madman was actually a herald, don't you?
I think it's likely.
He spoke with a rural Alethi accent, Dalinar.
And he looked Makabaki, Dalinar replied.
That alone is an oddity, wouldn't you say?
Immigrant families are not so uncommon.
Ones with shard blades?
Kadash shrugged.
Let's say I could actually find one of the heralds, Dalinar said. Let's say we could confirm his identity and you accepted that proof. Would you believe him if he told you the same things I have?
Kadash sighed.
Surely you'd want to know if the Almighty were dead, Kadash, Dalinar said, stepping back into the room.
Tell me you wouldn't.
You know what it would mean? It would mean there is no spiritual basis for your rule.
I know.
And the things you did in conquering Alethkar, Kadash said. No divine mandate, Dalinar. Everyone accepts what you did because your victories were proof of the Almighty's favor. Without him, then what are you?
Tell me, Kadash, would you really rather not know?
Kadash looked at the span reed, which had stopped writing. He shook his head.
I don't know, Dalinar. It certainly would be easier. Isn't that the problem? What has any of this ever required of men like me? What has it required of any of us?
It required you to be what you are, which is self-fulfilling, Dalinar said.
You were a swordsman, Kadash. Would you have gotten better without opponents to face? Would you have gotten stronger without weights to lift? Well, in Boronism, we've spent centuries avoiding the opponents and the weights.
Again, Kadash glanced at the span reed.
What is it? Dalinar asked.
I left most of my span reeds behind, Kadash explained, when I went with you toward the center of the Shattered Plains. I took only the span reed linked to an Ardent transfer station in Kolinar. I thought that would be enough, but it no longer works. I've been forced to use intermediaries in Tashik.
Kadash lifted a box onto the desk and opened it. Inside were five more span reeds with blinking rubies indicating that someone had been trying to contact Kadash.
These are links to the leaders of Voronism in Yarkoved, Erdaz, Karbranth, Thelona, and New Natnan,
Kadash said, counting them off.
They had a meeting via reeds today discussing the nature of the desolation and the Everstorm. And perhaps you. I mentioned I was going to recover my own span reeds today. Apparently their meeting has made them all very eager to question me further.
He let the silence hang between them, measured out by the five blinking red lights.
What of the one that is writing? Dalinar asked.
Aligned to the Palinaeum and the heads of Voron Research there. They've been working on the Dawn Chant using the clues Brightness Navani gave them from your visions. What they've sent me are relevant passages from ongoing translations.
Proof, Dalinar said. You wanted solid proof that what I've been seeing is real.
He strode forward, grabbing Kadash by the shoulders.
You waited for that reed first before answering the leaders of Voronism?
I wanted all the facts in hand.
So you know that the visions are real?
I long ago accepted that you weren't mad. These days it's more a question of who might be influencing you. Why would the Voidbringers give me these visions? Dalinar said. Why would they grant us great powers like the one that flew us here? It's not rational, Kadash.
Neither is what you're saying about the Almighty.
He held up a hand to cut off Dalinar. I don't want to have this argument again. Before you asked me for proof that we are following the Almighty's precepts, right?
All I asked for and all I want is the truth.
We have it already. I'll show you.
I look forward to it, Dalinar said, walking to the door. But Kadash, in my painful experience, the truth may be simple, but it is rarely easy.
Dalinar crossed to the next building over and counted down the rooms. Storms, this building felt like a prison. Most of the doors hung open, revealing uniform chambers beyond. Each had one tiny window, a slab for a bed, and a thick wooden door. The Ardents knew what was best for the sick. They had access to all the world's latest research in all fields. But was it really necessary to lock madmen away like this? Number 37 was still bolted shut. Dalinar rattled the door, then threw his shoulder against it. Storms, it was thick. Without thinking, he put his hand to the side and tried summoning his shard blade. Nothing happened.
What are you doing?
The Stormfather demanded.
Sorry,
Dalinar said, shaking his hand out. Habit. He crouched down and tried peeking under the door, then called out, suddenly horrified by the idea that they might have simply left the man in here to starve. That couldn't have happened, could it?
My powers, Dalinar said, rising. Can I use them? Binding things, the Stormfather said. How would that open a door? You are a bondsmith. You bring things together. You do not divide them.
And my other surge, Dalinar said. That radiant in the vision made stone warp and ripple.
You are not ready. Besides, that surge is different for you than it is for a stone ward.
Well, from what Dalinar could see underneath the door, there seemed to be light in this room. Perhaps it had a window to the outside he could use. On his way out, he poked through the Ardent chambers until he found an office like Kadash's. He didn't find any keys, though the desk still had pens and ink sitting on it. They'd left in haste, so there was a good chance the wall safe contained records. But of course, Dalinar couldn't get in. Storms, he missed having a shard blade. He rounded the outside of the building to check the window, then immediately felt silly for spending so much time trying to get through the door. Somebody else had already cut a hole in the stone out here using the distinctive clean slices of a shard blade. Dalinar stepped inside, picking his way around the broken remnants of the wall which had fallen inward, indicating that the shard bearer had cut from the outside. He found no madman. The Ardents had likely seen this hole and moved on with their evacuation. News of the strange hole must not have filtered up to the lead Ardents. He didn't find anything to indicate where the Herald had gone, but at least he knew a shardbearer was involved. Someone powerful had wandered into this room, which lent even more credence to the madman's claims of being a Herald. So who had taken him? Or had they done something to him instead? What happened to a Herald's body when they died? Could someone else have come to the same conclusion that Jasnah had? As he was about to leave, Dalinar spotted something on the ground beside the bed. He knelt down, shooed away a kremling, and picked up a small object. It was a dart, green with yellow twine wrapped around it. He frowned, turning it over in his fingers. Then he looked up as he heard someone distantly calling his name. He found Kaladin out in the monastery courtyard calling for him. Dalinar approached, then handed him the little dart.
Ever seen anything like this before, Captain?
Kaladin shook his head. He sniffed at the tip, then raised his eyebrows. That's poison on the tip. Blackbane derived.
Are you sure?
Dalinar asked, taking the dart back.
Very. Where did you find it?
In the chamber that housed the Herald. Kaladin grunted. You need more time for your search?
Not much, Dalinar said. Though it would help if you'd summon your shard blade.
A short time later, Dalinar handed Navani the records he'd taken from the Arden's safe. He dropped the dart in a pouch and handed it over as well, warning her about the poisoned tip. One by one, Kaladin sent them into the sky, where his bridgemen caught them and used stormlight to stabilize them. Dalinar was last, and as Kaladin reached for him, he took the captain by the arm.
You want to practice flying in front of a storm, Dalinar said. Could you get to Thelenor?
Probably, Kaladin said, if I lashed myself southward as fast as I can go.
Go then, Dalinar said. Take someone with you to test flying another person in front of a storm if you want. But get to Thalen City. Queen Fenn is willing to join us, and I want that oath gate active. The world has been turning before our very noses, Captain. Gods and heralds have been warring, and we were too focused on our petty problems to even notice.
I'll go next Highstone, Kaladin said, then sent Dalinar soaring up into the air.